Executive Officer's report. Ms. Bean?
Thank you, Vice Chair Dias, and good evening, board members and staff and public members. I'm going to update you on some items that are in your packet and then give you some announcements and some new information that I hope will be helpful to you. This month, we have two EO reports in your packet for April and for May, just for reference. So a few announcements of things coming up in case you're interested. Just a reminder, on June 1st, the Mojave Agency is hosting another of their watershed tours. Our own Kimberly Cox will be helping with that event. Felicia Marcus, the chair of the Water Board, will be attending, and Gordon Burns, the Undersecretary of Cal EPA, and I'll be going as well. So if anyone else has any interest, it's a one-day tour instead of a two-day tour. Please let Sue know, we can make arrangements. A reminder that June 10th and 11th is our next board meeting in Bishop, and then we'll be having a tour of Cinnamon Meadows, the restoration project. That should be interesting, so that's our next board meeting. Get prepared with your hiking boots for that one. And in July, we will have another tour. When our board meeting is in Tahoe, July 8th and 9th, a tour of the Truckee River Watersheds Restoration Projects and other activities up in that area. Also, to mark on your calendars, if you would like to attend, again, let Sue and I know, but August 24th, which I believe is a Monday, is the next Tahoe Summit that the two governors traditionally attend and various other elected officials, including Senator Feinstein, Senator Reid, who Amy just recently left his office. This year, Senator Heller is the sponsor of the summit. I don't have the location yet, but please let me know if you have interest in attending. I'm now going to draw your attention to the EO report that's in your packet, just to give you a few updates or additional information on some of the items in your packet. One of the items, item one in your first part, is about the UC Davis Rustiki Conference on GRAP. And I attended that along with Kim Niemeyer and Doug Cushman of our office and a number of other regional boards. The reason I want to mention that to you is that, as you know, our region has been a leader on the statewide GRAP process. And I want to let you know that now that the five listening sessions have concluded and the three public workshops, we're now at the stage where we're briefing the board, state board members on what stakeholders said and what are the range of options that the board can consider, the state board that is, going forward. The state board is going to have to give us guidance as staff on whether they want to continue with the statewide approach or perhaps try a different effort like potentially returning to the status quo with the regional boards taking the lead on cattle grazing regulation. We have pretty much briefed all the board members except for one, so we're very close getting some formal direction from the state board on what they would like to see done next. At a minimum, and for those of you that participate in some of these workshops, we're going to be doing a couple things no matter what the board decides to do, and that is certainly update the website and post all the comments and attendee lists from all those sessions. We will be attending ranch tours. We've been invited, and if any of these come available that the board members are interested in, I will make them available to you in case you're interested. I can tell you that I am planning a tour in early June with regions 1 and 5 in the Central Valley area to talk to the U.S. Forest Service about how we can improve BMPs. I will also be visiting the Bridgeport Ranchers in the fall. They'd asked us to come meet with them and see some of their activities, what's working, what's not working in our region in the fall. The other commitments we had made to stakeholders, again, whether depending on what the board decides to go forward or try something different, a lot of the comments were about what are the water quality problems. There's a lot of confusion in the regulated community about the scope and the extent of the problems in terms of water quality. So we as staff will be preparing some documents for not just for the public, for everyone, about where are the water problems with rate grazing in the state. The ones that are on the 303D list, the ones that are not listed but we have problems, and areas where non-point source prevention measures could be beneficial. A second document that we promised the stakeholders that we're going to produce too is to summarize existing tools and programs used by the various regional boards. Pretty much all the regional boards do some sort of regulatory efforts with grazing, and each one does it a little bit differently. But to kind of explain what that is and what is good or bad about it, or what works or doesn't work about it, I think is valuable to have for a dialogue going forward. We also are going to prepare a fact sheet on the 303D listing process and delisting process, because there's a lot of misinformation and confusion among stakeholders about how that works, why we list things, how do you get things off lists. So the State Board has changed their policy somewhat recently, so it's time perhaps to prepare a document and help share that with all the stakeholders. So you may wonder, well, where does that leave the State Board? If the State Board chooses to continue with a statewide effort, then those of us who are leading the effort from the staff side, we will definitely take into account all the suggestions, ideas from stakeholders and the regional boards of how to improve the process going forward. There was a lot of criticism about not having small localized meetings, of not involving them in decision-making. So there's a lot of things we could do going forward on a statewide basis if we went that way. Now, if the State Board wants to return that effort to the regional board, which in my opinion seems highly likely, they could suggest ideas to improve our efforts, like in prioritizing sites, maybe only dealing with the ones that we know are problems, the potential problems, cost of compliance, outreach, and how to improve BMPs. Grazing is predominantly handled through BMPs, and so how do we make that a better tool? Also, the region boards could work with the ranchers and public agencies to improve all of the BMPs, both voluntary and those that we might use as a regulatory tool. When I mentioned that tour earlier that we're doing with regions 1, 5, and our ward with the Forest Service, that's exactly what we're doing. We're going to walk through some BMPs and understand what works and doesn't work, because both Region 5 and Region 1 are going to try to build BMPs into a regulatory tool. So how do we do that? So that's my update on the grazing, and I'm hoping to give you more direction later when I hear from all the State Board members on what their wishes are. If the State Board members choose to do a back-to-the-regions approach, it could be expected that they'll ask that a resolution go before the State Board memorializing the changes and the directions to the regional board, and that could potentially happen this summer. Another item, I'm going to switch now to another item, from cows to groundwater, and that's an item 2 of your packet. Rich Booth did a great write-up on the SGMA law, or the Statewide Groundwater Management Law, and identified for the board members where are our basins. So I think that's very valuable. I have lists of all of our basins. We have quite a few in our region. But really it's a smaller subset of that you'll see in the report that we really focus on. And the report does highlight that the Mojave and the Antelope are our high-priority basins. And one is in adjudication and one is on the fringe of almost being into adjudication. Therefore, will be handled differently under the law. We have a bunch of medium priority basins that are listed in there. Martis Valley, Tahoe South, Owens Valley, Indian Wells, Lower Mojave, El Mirage. These are all ones that we're still waiting to get direction from DWR and how they want to handle it. There will be some measures for those in the medium category to do, but it'll be less onerous, if I would, and the timelines are longer for those in the category.
Can I ask a question about
sure.
that? I was just wondering if you have any sense of what, how much institutional capacity those medium priority basins have. I mean, I suspect there's a range of institutional capacity to come up with, to meet the requirements, and whether there are tools available to help them meet their requirements.
That's a good question. And this law, I think, is generating a lot of interest amongst these various local governments to get together and figure out what capacity they have to manage it. DWR, the way the law breaks apart very simplistically is that DWR is in charge of all the technical assistance for these folks. They're the ones that will decide what are the boundaries of the basin. You know, they're the ones that will decide are the structures, the management structures that folks are going to set up able to handle it. They'll deal, like I said, with the boundaries. And they also, to your question, Amy, about tools, they'll also help with money and technical assistance to these groups. The Water Board's role is, their main role is, I guess, what you would call a backstop. In the event that one of these local communities can't manage their areas or is unwilling or unable to do so, the State Board can, by very detailed language in that law, step in certain situations. The goal being that, in theory, maybe the State Board could step in and help them manage the groundwater, and perhaps someday it could go back to the locals to manage. The whole focus of it is let locals manage it. But it's a new law, and my experience is whenever you have new laws that pave new ground, there are a lot of bumps in the road, and you learn things along the way, and you adjust. It's not uncommon to see these big new laws amended 3 or 4 or 5 times over the next 2 to 4 years while they work out all the lumps and bumps. It's new for everyone. There are some key dates. I'll introduce a term to you that you'll hear a lot called PUMAs, potentially unmanaged areas. You know, when I mentioned there are areas where locals are going to get together, well, there are likely going to be areas of the state where there are groundwater aquifers that the locals are unwilling or unable to deal with it. And so someone's got to step in and help with those. So part of this process is going to be identifying the PUMAs, what areas the poor folks not going to be managing it or need help. Yes?
What about existing groundwater management districts?
Pardon?
Existing groundwater management districts that were formed 10 years ago sometimes.
As a practical matter, what I'm seeing is many of the areas in the state, particularly those ones in the high priority ones, have already assembled groups and have groups. So there's heavy leaning on the existing infrastructure. I think where you're going to have issues are in areas where you have smaller, perhaps medium ones, also particularly where you have disagreements among local leaders about who should help control and who, because they have to create structures. They have to be able to prove that they could manage the water. They have to prove they have enforcement authority. They have to prove they have fee authority. All these are the things that DWR, when they submit the plans to DWR, they're going to be looking at all those things. Are you capable of managing the water?
But for adjudicated basins, it won't apply.
I'm actually interested, if you already have an existing groundwater management district, as there is in Truckee, how does that play with this new potential organization? Do they have to change to conform to this new, whatever it is, going to turn out to be, or they just keep going on as they were and become the equivalent of the GSA for the area, since they were already formed, a decade ago?
I think what I'm seeing is that they're using existing groups, as you just mentioned, as a foundation of this, but will those organizations have to change how they operate? Highly likely to comply with this law. Some of them may or may not have the right fee authorities. They may or may not have the right enforcement tools. They may or may not have the infrastructure to deal with the monitoring that the law requires. So I guess the short answer is yes, they're going to have to make some changes. How much, I'm not sure. That's going to vary.
So is it going to be up to us to help to intercede in that, or is it going to be the Department of Water Resources or somebody else to grease the ways?
The regional boards do not have a role or responsibility in this particular law. It is predominantly DWR that has the bulk of it, and the State Water Resources Control Board in the water rights section that has the other part of it with the backstop.
Thanks.
But that, I think, is evolving and changing as there's dialogues about how's this all going to work. I think they're going to, like I said, over the next couple of years, you're going to see probably some evolution and trimming and fine-tuning of this law. We're all learning. DWR, Water Board 2, I think we're all learning. And I'll get to the end where I think I can get a lot of your questions answered. I'm going to give you just two more dates, and then I'll get to where I think the questions can be answered. As I said, they hope to have, by next summer, DWR release the lists of the basins that are categorized. I just mentioned some now, but they're going to go through them again. They're also going to deal with the boundaries, what are the boundaries of these, and that will be out. They will also, next summer, release draft regulations for how is this law going to work for public comment. So everyone's very interested in seeing that come out. And then after they have those, there are various deadlines for the fee structures to go into place for both the PUMAs, which I mentioned, and where the local governments have stepped up to deal with it. But I'm going to have you save your ideas, because Eric Ekdahl, who's the new supervisor, like a young man, for this new groundwater unit, has been offering to come to each regional board and give a PowerPoint presentation on how this law works and to answer all these questions. And I've seen some of those PowerPoints, that he tailors them to the regional board. So he will talk about every one of these basins that I mentioned. And so we're slated, and Rich is working with him, to come in November before the board to give you that presentation to answer all your questions. I'm just giving sort of a primer of it here.
I think we should be sure to ask people from the existing agencies to come.
That would be good.
To
I'm sure they would appreciate that. Yeah. That's a good idea. We'll follow up on that to try to reach out to people. So that's that big, giant new groundwater law that's out there. I am going to shift entirely, completely to the south, our Victorville office area, and just mention, item 8 gave you a nice update on what we're doing in the city of Barstow and perchlorate plume, and it's merging with the nitrate plume and all we're doing. I really just want to take a moment to thank the Victorville office, Cindy Minton, Bill Muir, Rebecca Phillips, and Mike Plasiak. They really have gone above and beyond of trying to help this community. From the citizens that don't have drinking water to trying to get in money from the cleanup and abatement account, to working with the city of Barstow, with community leaders to help them deal with not just their perchlorate, but their nitrate problems. So some really good work, and you can read about it in that report. And stay tuned for more, because they're still working with these groups in the community to try to find other solutions to not just their drinking water problems, but how do we deal with that plume which has no responsible party and keeps moving into the city of Barstow nitrate plume. Because at some point we need to do something, because it's just going to keep moving. But the staff are working very hard, and I just wanted to let you know that. I'm going to shift gears again. We're going to go back to Lake Tahoe. Item 5 in your packet on base stamp 4-28 gives a summary of all the dredging projects at Lake Tahoe at the moment, or the last 2-3 years, including what's going on at the moment. Because of the drought, you're seeing an awful lot of uptick in dredging project, which is to be understandable. But let me give you some most recent information on one that affects that staff have taken action on most recently. And that is the permit that we issued to TKP, or the Tahoe Keys Homeowners Association, to do a dredging project. Because there have been legacy practices in that area where they used aluminum sulfate as a flocculant back in the day, you're going to find, you know, aluminum in the debris. You don't see it much when you're monitoring the water, but when you're dredging and you're pulling up those soils, you're going to see that. So let me give you an update from staff on where we are on that. So TKPOA is finishing up its dredging this week. They're pulling the dredge sand out, and they're using it to help with beach erosion. So they're reusing it, that they're pulling it out. We have a new revised permit out on the street for a 10-day comment to allow for additional beach area for the dredged material. They underestimated, I guess, how much sand there would be and where they would put on the beach. So they need more space on the beach to put more sand, basically. And so they're asking for that. But this is the part that I think is very important that you need to know. We took samples in early April of the dredging when they were doing weed removal by hand, you know, with the divers. And it showed aluminum concentrations more than 4 times higher the chronic aquatic toxicity objective of 87. So we tested roughly a week later, and unfortunately the numbers are even higher, exceeding the acute aquatic toxicity objective as 750. It did not exceed the MCL, but it was close. So staff have been working with the homeowners associations and the consultants working on the dredging to find out more details. They were issued a notice of violation. And the question is, what is the concentration of the aluminum in the beach sand that's even pulled up and put on the beach? Where are they being placed? You know, we need to have a better understanding of that for obviously for protection of the environment and public health too, where the community are going to recreate on that sand. We don't have the numbers yet, and depending on what we find, we of course will act accordingly and appropriately on how to handle that. We are also considering adding extra conditions or revising the permit issued to the Tahoe Keys Marina, which is the second area there, based on this new information about the lumen, because if we found it in Tahoe Keys, it's highly likely they're going to have the same problems. Perhaps we can head it off at the pass or work with them at least so that they can do proper testing before they start. They haven't started dredging yet. We are also, when we get the information, going to be sharing this with our scientists and others, local governments, some of who work on this. I just wanted you to know that that is what we've been learning, and there will be a lot of interest on that.
So the solution is it's high in aluminum would be that they couldn't apply it to the beach. It would have to go to landfill.
Could be if the numbers are that high, yeah.
In terms of other interim solutions for Tahoe Keys Marina, I mean, some of the things we've talked about is having requiring a smaller containment area. This would be similar to how the State Board handles aquatic pesticides, and we've talked about that when we brought that basin plan amendment to the board a few years ago, so that if we know we're going to have toxic conditions in the water column during dredging, we can try to minimize the area that's being impacted by ensuring that their dredge curtain area is a smaller area and maybe letting requiring them to have that settle out before they move to the next area. I mean, just to try to minimize the impact. In the case of the Tahoe Keys Marina project, they are not planning beach replenishment. They were planning to haul the material out, so that's the good news. That was already part of their permit, was to remove it. But now we're thinking about adding conditions related to testing and potentially trying to just minimize the impacts during dredging. So.
Well, on that subject, I'm going to switch out of giving updates on the packet before you and then move to some updates. Well, as I gave you a teaser, Kathy Poole has just joined us from Toxics. She's filling Scott Ferguson's position, so we're very, very thrilled to have her. She'll be in charge of the enforcement and special projects unit. Kathy brings with her 14 years of supervisorial experience while working for the state of Nevada and Douglas County. While with Douglas, she was responsible for a variety of programs, including the MPDS stormwater, landfill monitoring, water and sewer modeling, floodplains and hydraulic reviews, and development and construction permit reviews. So she really covered a lot of issues. She's also provided program manager for the county's wellhead protection plan and sewer master plan, so she's been planning work too. Kathy came to us, as I said, directly from toxics in the Berkeley office. She'd been managing groundwater and beta stone cleanups at a site in San Leandro. She was also involved in reviewing and improving work plans and cleanup operations for dry cleaners, residential pest and residue cleanups, and PG&E substations. So please help me welcome Kathy. We're thrilled to have you. On to a lighter subject, but I part of the food something for you, Amy. You missed our last meeting, but our poor little green Jeep that was out there was stolen. Well, we found it. We found it in Las Vegas. So I guess whoever had a fun ride in it. It was a little worse for wear. It still ran, but it's time for a new vehicle, so that'll be the end of the green Jeep. I throw something light in there for you. Our Victorville office, you know that I've been updating on a regular basis that we're going to try to find new housing and a better place for our Victorville office. Sadly, because of budget issues and mechanics and contracting and DGS things, our last review fell through. So we begin yet again on our third journey to try to find a new home. DGS is now running an ad to solicit property owners to get lists of names, and Mike and Rebecca are dutifully going back for the third time in June to look at properties. So before, I used to give you estimates when I thought this was going to happen. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to give you any more estimates because I don't know. I'm just hopeful this third time is a charm, and maybe we'll find an even better building. That's my hope. ECM, Electronic Content Management. I think I updated the board previously that we were going to convert. All the state board and regional boards are converting. We were one of the last to convert, and that was because of broadband issues with our infrastructure. But so we went live on May 1st. I had written a letter to all of our dischargers asking us to submit information to us electronically, and we'll upload. You know, as any new system, it takes a while to work out the kinks, train staff, and we're still waiting for some software updates. So it's going to take a little bit of time to adjust to the new system, for the discharge to get used to the new system and how we search it. So it's a learning experience. But what we'll all get there. You know, we always, change is always hard, you know, but it takes time. Many of our discharges already load stuff automatically. Our CWIX, GeoTracker, and Smarts, which is a stormwater database. So they already, like, this is like old hat for them. But our hope is that, with this tool, making it more efficiency for both staff and also for the public to access information better and more efficiently.
So is this an umbrella tool that includes CWIX and all the other ones? Or?
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of mumbling going on
there. We can talk about it later.
Yeah.
I'm sensing a lot of
working out the kinks. Working out the kinks.
Not.
Yeah. So, to that end, I had issued a cleanup with the Baton Rouge staff, so we have a day set aside, so we never have time to actually clean our offices, both electronic and paper. So we had a cleanup with the Baton Rouge and to clean out our offices in April, and we're going to do another one of those in fall. Crystal Geyser is my next item I want to update you on. And this, Crystal Geyser operates a water bottling facility in Olancha on Highway 395. Some of you may have seen it. It's right off the highway by Owens Lake. They've been discharging processed waters to a perk pond and lined fire pond for a long time, in addition to discharging wastewater from their arsenic treatment system to on-site lined ponds. All of the discharges have been occurring without a water board or a toxics permit. Amy's shaking her head. That's right. Well, late of last year, we issued an investigative order requiring them to investigate the impact of the waste discharge practices upon the surface and shallow groundwater in that area. Crystal Geyser did indeed submit their Phase 1 investigation results in early of this year. In response, we have taken the following actions based on the report we've received. One, we've entered into a joint investigative agreement with Toxix, who is also at the same time investigating the site. We've issued a comment letter regarding the Phase 1 investigation and their next stage, Phase 2. We've issued a notice of violation related to the arsenic and other constituents. We've required Crystal Geyser to submit a report of waste discharge for its Alliance facility. The staff will begin drafting the WDRs once a completed report of waste discharge has been received so that we can get them under the fold of a proper permit that they should have had years ago. We've issued an amended investigative order requiring additional investigative activities and extending the final report deadlines. That's because when we got the information, we learned more things that we needed to follow up on issues. The Water Board, Toxix, and Fish and Wildlife are all coordinating agencies on this effort. We're working very closely, and they're doing investigations. Now, good news, Crystal Geyser has ceased discharging wastewater from its arsenic treatment system to the on-site lined pond and will be disposing of that at a permitted off-site facility. So that's what's going on with Crystal Geyser. I mention that because, you know, it may make the press, and you should know about that. Related to that, Crystal Geyser Cab and Bar facility, they were proposing to build a second or new bottling facility nearby, just north of Alanja. So they have coverage under the statewide NPDES permit and a 401 for constructing the new facility. The Water Bar, we have required them last year to submit a report of waste discharge on that facility, which at the time the staff found to be incomplete. So we're in the process of trying to get a response and get the information on the incomplete letter. And again, like the other facility, if they do indeed submit the information, we can move forward with WDRs. This, I don't know if you've been reading in the press, there's a lot of interest in these bottling facilities from a water rights perspective. So I can tell you the Water Rights Office has asked me about these, and we've sent shared information with the Water Rights Division. But that's out of our purview in terms of the water supply questions. Interested parties, in addition to the three agencies I mentioned, Cardigan Mutual Water Company is very interested in the groundwater investigation. The company is concerned about the impacts upon the supply. This is particularly the cabin bar facility, too. And quality issues involving the potential for this facility to draw poor quality water from beneath Owens Lake into the water company wells. In addition to pulling contamination associated with the Olancha facility into the wells, Robert Bocock has been contacting us. He's representing the water district. Robert Bocock, if you recall, he works with Erin Brockovich and her law firm. So he's expressed interest in that. As you can see, as we've had a discussion about groundwater supply management, sometimes it's hard to separate water supply from water quality. It makes it very difficult. Another item I want to update you on is the general composting order. As you heard me earlier say, Region 6 has been a leader in the GRAP effort. Our own Brianna St. Pierre has been our representative to the statewide composting working group, and they've neared completion of a general order to take to the state board for adoption. But given recent opposition from CalRecycle and recycling industry to the Water Board's general permit, the State Board, rather than adopt it on June 16th, is instead going to have a workshop where they discuss it and allow those who have concerns to speak. What is unique about this is that we're going to assemble a panel of regional board experts. I think this is kind of maybe a way to the future. When the State Board takes up policy items like that, and the regional boards have different ways of doing it, you have a panel right there of experts to help answer the questions for the state board. So Brianna's going to represent us. I'm going to do my darndest if it works out for me to be there. The two major concerns are it's really expensive that the water board's order is, according to industry, too stringent and too expensive and may harm the compost industry. I can tell you uniformly the regional boards feel very good, but no, we're not being unreasonable. Those are the kind of requirements we do need. Also, there are concerns that there's illegal dumping of green waste or land applications without a region of board permit. From pulling all the regions, we couldn't find any examples of that. If anything, I'm seeing an uptick in complaints about finished compost products. But anyways, that will be discussed. If all goes well by July 7th, the board will adopt some sort of a permit. And we have two facilities in our region. You may be aware of American Organics and Nursery Products. And there are, you know, because the governor and the CalRSAC are pushing reducing solid waste diversion to 75%, you're going to see a lot more increase or interest in more compost facility. And some have approached our Victorville office inquiring. So that's the compost thing. Just a quick one also on Lake Tahoe. We received, as you recall, SB 630 was enacted, and it took the money from around, like, the landowners and put it in the account of state lands, and we were given a portion of that money for nearshore monitoring. $200,000 of that was going to be devoted to hotspots monitoring. So we've just recently awarded that contract to USGS. We're very thrilled about that. And this is, again, to look at the increased algae growth near the shore. This is for the periphyton. So we're hoping to learn a lot from that. It'll be, I don't know if you recall this, but at the time we were trying to identify where should we do, and our discussion with the board was we should try to focus on the northwest shore, kind of near where the Sunnyside Marina is, kind of generically in that area, is where the work will start. So the study will be looking at the increased algae growth that's resulting from runoff, other onshore locations, groundwater, or maybe even lake upwelling. We're really going to look at all the options and to try to drill down what is causing it. It's part of a bigger project we're doing, but I thought it was important to let you know that contract is out and awarded. We hope to have results by summer of 2017. Those are all the items I want to update the board on. I don't know if you have any questions about any of those items.
Question? No.
I have a question on the Tahoe Ponds item.
Yeah.
This is a question for Tim, really. Do we have any authority to require Tahoe Ponds to pay for the permanent water connection to the Mark Twain Lodge? I mean, why should Mark Twain Lodge have to pay for the water connection when it was done to them?
Right. Not really.
Why not? Why don't we have that authority?
Because what they could do is they could sue, Tahoe Toms could sue to have that done. That's not something we could do, but
Mark
Twain could sue Tahoe Toms.
I have an update for the just this week. It's good. Well, I don't know whether it is or not. So just to be clear for the full board, we did issue a cleanup and abatement order last year, you know, right around the 4th of July, when we found out that Mark Twain Motel had empty. So that order required immediate bottled water to be provided to the motel residents, and it required a plan for permanent replacement water. We received a plan, and that was initially with the consultant for the Tahoe Toms, current owner, was planning for wellhead treatment and worked with Mark Twain owner on that. And then had to also work with the health department to get a permit for the wellhead treatment. So we essentially approved their plan to put in wellhead treatment at the Mark Twain Motel, which was carbon canisters. Then the Mark Twain Hotel owner was having trouble with siting the canister, and the health department required two canisters instead of one canister. And essentially, they've gone back and forth about whether the Mark Twain Motel really wanted the system or not. So the discharger was willing to pay for that system and maintain it and monitor it, and that was because hooking up to Lakeside Water Company was going to be $50,000 or a lot more money than these carbon canisters would be. So Lisa's attended a number of meetings with the health department and the discharger and Mark Twain Motel, and it really got to the point where there was no common agreement really being reached. So This week, actually yesterday, Lisa went out to do an inspection because the Mark Twain Motel has decided to go ahead and hook up to the Lakeside Water Company, and they've hired an attorney.
Oh.
So it sounds like they will.
So we, just so you know, we were going to do a follow-up order, cleanup order related to an implementation date, because our order left that open. You know, we required a plan for the permanent replacement water, but we purposely did not put a final date because we knew there'd be this negotiation and they had to get permits from the county health department. And, you know, so we've been kind of waiting for a mutually agreeable plan so then we could order them to implement it in accordance with the schedule, but that hadn't happened. So that's what's going on.
So,
right,
Kim, do you know if the Mark Twain Hotel can recoup attorney's fees if they win?
No, I don't. I have no idea.
Okay.
But
I mean, this is ridiculous.
Mr. Pumphrey's nodding his head. So
I believe that there's a likelihood that they could do that.
They can. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it goes in part to we can require them to provide the replacement water. We can't specify the method and manner of compliance. So Tahoe Toms can pick whatever way that they want to do it, just as long as it meets the MCLs.
Yes. Well, they have not been compliant for very long. So
that would be true. Long time.
I mean, this was item on the that we dealt with the very first meeting I came to this board, and that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So it's been
before that.
So it's just like, okay, you start losing patience.
That's frustrating.
Anyways, thank you.
Thank you.